All right, everybody. Welcome to the first broadcast of Bird's Eye View for the off-season now for Orioles baseball.
That's right. Rather than week whatever, it's just off-season one.
Off-season one. We lost count.
Yeah. Well, hey, there's a little bit of distance in between now and the end of the playoffs, so...
The crying has stopped.
The aching has ended. We can look somewhat objectively back at the playoffs, and let's just start there. The Orioles made it to the playoffs. They were one of the wild card teams.
The Orioles made it to the playoffs.
That's right. They were one of the teams involved. They won the wild card game, the winner-take-all playoff game.
Wait. They made it to the playoffs, and they won a playoff game?
Oh, not just one, my friend. Because then they advanced to the ALDS, and they won a couple before losing other excruciating games in the ALDS.
Who did we play during the ALDS? The Yankees?
Yes.
Oh, we had to crush them.
Yes, in order to advance, we did have to crush them.
Yeah, we crushed them. You said that we won more than one game.
We did. Unfortunately, they also won more than one game. In fact, they won more than two games, which was all that was really necessary.
Fucking best of five crap. That's bullshit.
Yeah. If it had been best of the games that we won, then it would have been fine.
It's true.
It would have been fine. But I'm actually okay at this point. Listeners may have noticed that the blog and the podcast have been a bit dark, and that's because I just couldn't bring myself to think, talk, or write about the end of the playoffs. But I think enough time has passed that I'm done being butthurt, and I can kind of think about the playoffs, maybe not objectively, but I can think about it without weeping.
Well, to be fair, you go back through the historical context of this podcast, and you look at it, what it was in September, and you basically weren't going to accept anything besides world domination.
That's true.
So, they didn't dominate the world. They tried to invade Russia, and they got turned back, basically.
I was unwilling to settle.
That's true, you were unwilling to settle. So now you have to settle.
I'm not sure I have to settle. It's just they didn't win. Yeah, I don't know how else to say it.
You should be used to it after 13 years.
Well, I should be. But I thought that we could actually beat the Yankees. And really, as close as those games were, we could have. It goes back to that first...
April.
Yes, it goes back to that first series of podcasts when we had an argument over whether, well, gee, they were just competitive games was a real thing that you could say.
What did I say? I think I said bullshit. They need to win now.
And they did for most of it.
And now I'm saying it's okay that they came up that way, and now you're saying bullshit, they needed to win.
Yes.
Wow.
All right.
We've come full circle.
We have come full circle.
I've turned into you, and you've turned into me. Pity on you.
Yeah, this is not a good thing. Well, let's talk a little bit about the ALDS. I don't want to go through game by game, pitch by pitch, the way we can occasionally do when we're bored. I just want to talk about some of the larger themes. And
this is the first playoff series that you've ever been to. So let's talk about that.
It was amazing. It was amazing. There was no other way to put it. I went to ALDS game 1 and 2. I sat in left field upper reserve, and it was ridiculous how loud the stadium was. It was ridiculous how into it the fans were, and it was so refreshing to be part of a meaningful baseball game at Camden Yards. And I've sat through so many stinkers. I've sat through so many games where, you were the only person sitting in your section. And to have other people there who were there because they were excited about the game, it was just amazing. It was amazing.
One of the greatest moments of your life?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Literally, I had been waiting for that for 15 years.
Probably longer than that. You've probably been waiting for that moment to actually go to a game like that for your entire life.
Absolutely. And you?
I've got to say, I went to game one of the ALDS, and it was probably one of the most miserable experiences of my life. But
yes,
there's other situations that occurred there, namely my car not being available when I got back to it. And the rain delay didn't help either, and...
See, now for me, I'm just the opposite. The rain delay was interesting because I was all excited about it, about going to the game, and then the rain delay just kind of put a damper on it. And I thought, oh, crap, nobody's going to stay. It's going to be really embarrassing. Stadium will be half empty. And then as the rain delay drew to a close and the seats started to fill again, I just kind of, I got it back. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I think if I would have been there by myself, I would actually have been feeling that way. But having your wife that's 6 or 7 months pregnant there with you, it kind of puts an aspect of, I hope everything's going to be okay with her and the baby. So you're constantly kind of worrying. You kind of snuck off, I think, with your father and got hammered, but...
That may have happened.
Yeah.
That may have happened. The only thing there was to do during the rain delay was drink.
And drink.
And drink.
Yeah, needless to say, I saw your wife sitting in the rain delay by herself for at least 2 hours.
I had business to
You're a good husband.
Yeah.
You're a good husband.
I think that goes without saying. Yeah, so the atmosphere was great. I mean... It'll be interesting to see how the fans respond next year.
It was a magical experience. It was good to see a game like that played in Baltimore. And it was important for both the players and the fans to actually have that moment.
I think they bonded. I do.
I think they bonded as well. But going back to ALDS game number one and game number two, game number one really was a story of Jim Johnson...
Crapping the bed.
And we just haven't come to see that this often this season. The only time we saw that was via one of the Oakland games. I think it was actually during the Eddie Murray game where he basically blew it, but the Orioles came back and won that game.
Right. Well, he was, I think it was 48 of 51. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
48 of 51, and he didn't actually... He only lost one game. I think he blew three saves. But two of them, the Orioles came back to actually win, and he was the winning pitcher in those contests. He only blew one save all season. And so, you know, once we got to the playoffs, it happened again. And, you know, it was a timing thing. You know, the statistics say eventually it's going to happen. Eventually it's going to even itself out. And it definitely did in the playoffs.
Thanks, Bobby Valentine. You can only be lucky for so long, huh?
No, it's not that. It's just that no player is perfect. Okay. And he had been perfect all season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it just is going to happen. Again, it's part of the aspect of, though, that was a prime opportunity for that game to score runs, and they didn't take opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and the thing was is that he didn't just blow the save. He imploded.
He did implode.
In the ninth inning.
Once Russell Martin hit that home run, he kind of just slipped away really quickly.
Oh, yeah, and the thing is that he hit that home run and took the Yankees ahead. But the game wasn't over.
No.
The game was over when he continued to give up runs
right.
to the tune of five runs in the top of the ninth. At that point, I mean, you just put too much pressure on your lineup. But it was unfortunate.
You know, but not to keep belaboring and going back into the depth.
Let's belabor the point.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go about Jim Johnson, but actually, I don't want to continue to go into game logs. But game two, I thought, was a really amazing game. I really went really sour into that game. Mainly because game number one, you lost, really put a sour taste in your mouth, and then you had game two, and you had Andy Pettitte coming.
Sure.
And with as many years as we've gone against Andy Pettitte, and he's just dominated the Orioles, to see Chen come out there and just out-duel Pettitte, absolutely amazing. And the fact that Jim Johnson was able to come back that next game and get the save.
Yeah, and get off the schneid, absolutely. Right. No, it was a good game, and it was interesting because, again... Chen gave up a first inning run.
Which he's done very often throughout this whole season.
But he rallied, and the team rallied behind him to pick up some runs.
I don't disagree at all. Okay, so we're going to have to go back now to game three in the Bronx. And unfortunately...
That was the Voldemort game, right?
That was the Lord Voldemort game, yes.
All right, I have some serious complaints about this game. Again,
mainly because Robalo Ibanez looks like Lord Voldemort.
That is my major complaint. But the real issue that I have is this. Ibanez hit two home runs. And the first home run, okay. You know, again, it's a shame that our closer blew it again. And that it's upsetting. But I was really upset with his second home run. His second game-winning home run. Because let me just paint the picture for you. All right. Buck brings in Mattis, the left-handed specialist, the new left-handed specialist, in to face the guy who's hot. All right. In to face the guy who's already hit a game-saving home run. And what does he do? Mattis throws a first-pitch fastball.
Yeah.
Right down Broadway.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure that Ifania's put it on Broadway. Yeah. That pitch to me, selection, location, execution, completely unacceptable.
Yeah, there's just something weird about this game. And it's, again, it's that Yankees aspect. Let's go back and think about this through a baseball aspect. You pulled Alex Rodriguez out of the lineup, and you put Raul Ibanez in to replace him, and the Yankees still managed to win.
Yeah. There's no... You can't break that down and dissect it and analyze it and have it make sense. You can't.
Oh, I can think of many things. Cork bats, juice balls. I can think of plenty of things that could be this happen. Steroids.
Yeah, there are lots of things I want to be the reason, but it all goes back to...
Whoa. Hold on. I'm not going to go back into this whole aspect of I want to make it happen. Aaron fucking Boone. Well, I mean, honestly... There's only so many times that bullshit like that can happen for one team over and over again. I don't care how many times Derek Jeter comes out and says, this is a team that just knows how to win. Bull fucking shit. There's a conspiracy here. I know no one wants to talk about an MLB, but there's a conspiracy here.
When you buy all the best players, it's really not that hard to win.
Raul Ibanez, is he one of the best players out there?
He's one of the best bench players there is out
bullshit.
There.
Bullshit. There's no way.
He's really good at hitting home runs off the bench in the playoffs. Just look at his track record.
You're absolutely right. He's great at that. But if you look at his previous history with the Phillies, bullshit. There's something occurring. I don't know what it is.
Well, let me ask you this. Was it that Raul Ibanez was amazing in the playoffs, or was it that our pitching was piss poor?
I think it's more the aspect of, go get the special balls.
All right, so you're...
Rub them up with pine tar.
Your contention is... He beat us, not we beat ourselves.
Look, I'm not saying he beat us.
By the way,
something happened.
Our listeners can't watch you dance out of this like I can, or try to dance out of this. But
it is so illogical. I can't even explain it. It's just so illogical. It doesn't make any sense. It really comes down to dark magic. It just comes down to dark magic.
But it happened.
It happened, but it was dark magic.
All right.
I'm not sure like how many souls he had to kill or whatever, but it was dark magic.
I'm pretty sure there are 7 pieces of him scattered throughout the ballpark.
Based on how ugly he looks, I can believe that.
All right, so game 3 was the black magic game. I'm fine with that.
It was fucking black magic, and the Yankees always seem to pull this black magic.
So we move on to game 4.
All I'm saying is, I'm not that upset about Sandy.
So we move on to game 4. And this is the one that after such a debilitating, soul-crushing, god-awful loss, it was nice to see the Orioles bounce back. It really was.
Again, this was a wee extra inning game as well, which I think it really plays into it. So you had the Orioles go into extra innings, and you're thinking to yourself, great, you know, the streak was broken last night. There's no way the Orioles are going to pull this off. And Pedro Strop really, well, the whole bullpen played great, but the fact that Pedro Strop was able to come in for 2 innings that game.
Yeah, he was kind of the man.
And that's a very unexpected being the man.
Oh, sure, they had avoided him for the entire
you kind of see him,
stretch.
You saw him coming
playoffs.
In, you said, this is the way it fucking ends. And that's actually, when he came in, I said, this is the way it fucking ends. It's Armando Benitez all over
right.
again.
Oh, absolutely.
It's over. And by God, he proved me wrong. He pitched amazing, and kudos to him. I mean, but the Orioles played a great game. And again, Jim Johnson was able to rally and had another great game. So you had crappy game, good game, crappy game, good game. And then we came to game 5. Yeah. And game 5 was just really a tale of CC Sabathia.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as simple as that. Is CC Sabathia for game 1 and game 5 absolutely dominated the Baltimore Orioles.
You know, he was great. All right. He pitched phenomenally. But, and I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but the offense disappeared during the ALDS, and it made them look even better. I'm not saying CC Sabathia didn't earn those wins. I'm not saying he's not a great pitcher.
He's not Verlander-esque.
Right. What I'm saying is, no, he was not Verlander-esque because he won games.
Really?
What I'm saying...
We're talking ALDS here. We're not talking World Series.
Okay. What I'm saying is that we...
You can't stop a panda.
We did everything that we could to make him look better.
Yeah, we did no service to ourselves because we didn't play good offensive baseball. But CC Sabathia really did play... He stepped it up a notch, and he really exemplified himself and also told the Orioles, this is why you go out and get a $20 million
number one
starter.
He was the ace. Yeah.
Yeah.
He,
this is why you have an ace.
He said this. Yeah.
And we sent Jason Hamill to the mound, which was our best option. But Jason Hamill versus CC Sabathia, the two don't compare.
Yeah. Jason Hamill couldn't go the distance, you know, like Sabathia. But, you know, again, the game ended 3-1. It's not like the Orioles got blown out. And the runs piled up in the 5th, 6th, and 7th inning. Yep. You know, it wasn't as if, you know, it wasn't as if Jason Hamill didn't hold his own. But the offense has to show up in the playoffs. It has to.
Yeah.
This team was built for, decent starting pitching, amazing bullpen, and an offense that can go get your runs. And in the playoffs, and
do we want to talk about offense right now in the ALDS?
Well, let me just finish my gross generalization here. In the playoffs, we got really solid bullpen work that faltered at the end. So yeah. you had the good bridge, you had good starting pitching, and you had absolutely no offense. And that's really what did the Orioles in. All right, let's go ahead and talk then about the offense. Okay. And let me start by saying, what offense?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go through some of the big players that really didn't do anything at all. So, your 3, 4, and 5 hitters, which I would say is Chris Davis, Matt Wieters, and Adam Jones. Adam Jones had an 0.87 average and an 0.87 slugging. So that means he had one hit and it was for a single.
Yeah.
Wieters had a 1.50 average, a 2.27 on base percentage, and a 200 slugging percentage. So that's piss poor as well. There's one extra base hit there, a double. Out of 20 at bats, and Chris Davis had 20 at bats as well. He had no extra base hits, 4 hits though, so he had a 200 average. So actually, all things considering, he was actually one of the better performing Orioles that whole series. But really, the only player that actually contributed significantly to the Orioles lineup was Nate McLouth, who had a 3.18 average, a 3.48 on base percentage, and a 500 slugging percentage. Yeah, I realize that's common. Actually, Ryan Flaherty and Robert Andino were right there at second base with some of the top averages, too, combined as well. So you had your 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 batters all not contributing at all. And if that doesn't happen, you only have your number one hitter hitting and maybe your 7, 8, and 9 hitter, you're not going to do anything.
Absolutely. And the guys that we had depended on all season to carry the offense just didn't. And I think the worst of the worst was Adam Jones. Adam Jones was really difficult to watch because he turned into that 2009 Adam Jones who just swung at every breaking ball, who just hacked up there, who didn't really look like he had an approach at the plate, who really looked overmatched in almost every at-bat. It was really upsetting to watch him. And I don't know if it was inexperience, you know, not being up to the task, you know, up to the moment, or if it was just fatigue.
I think it's partially fatigue, but again, I can't really make that argument because it's the playoffs. Suck it up and go for it.
Absolutely. And you're what got us here.
Yeah, hey, here's the thing, though.
You're a club leader.
If you go back to that previous last series with Tampa Bay, he was doing very poorly and batting the same way. So I can't contribute it just to this is the playoffs and you just came up against, you know, bad hitting. He just got really cold at the end of the season and was never able to recover.
I mean, can you say it's the same thing as Jim Johnson? You know, obviously a good player who just happened to have a bad series.
Yeah.
And who had, and by all accounts, a great season. And eventually statistics round themselves out in some way. And he just had a crappy 5 games.
And again, he didn't really have that crappy of games. He had 2 bad games and 2 good games. But again, for a closer, that's just not acceptable in a 5 game series.
No, but I mean with Jones, I mean, 2 hits... Jones in 23 at-bats over the course of 5 games when you're right there in the middle of the order, when you're, you know, supposed to be one of the cogs that makes the offense
Who's the number 4 hitter? Number 3 or number 4 hitter? Yeah, number 4 hitter cannot bat 0.87.
You just can't do that.
So, Adam Jones, stay hungry.
Yeah. Have another great breakfast. Another player that really had me just twisting in knots was Jim Thome. And Jim Thome did nothing. I mean, he had one hit in 12 at-bats over 3 games. But, you know, Tomey's supposed to be the designated hitter. You know, and he's supposed to be the guy that has veteran experience, playoff experience, and he's a guy that Buck really leans on for that presence. Yeah,
but except for the Boston series in September, I really can't think of anything off the top of my head where he really made an exclamation point on this season.
No, I agree, but I think that the way Buck views him and the way Buck used him based on that track record, he didn't deliver at all. And it was frustrating to watch the strikeouts in the situations that they happen.
Well, here's the thing. You can't throw strikeouts for Jim Thomae. He had 4. Adam Jones actually had 6 for that series. That tells you how bad he was. But you can't throw that many strikeouts into a lineup that already has Chris Davis and Mark Reynolds.
Right. And if you look at the series, it was the type of thing that there were really a lot of opportunities for the Orioles that they squandered.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that they got completely shut out, nobody was ever on base, but they never had timely hitting. No, and you watched a lot of innings come to an end where you're like, God, that was our chance. That was our chance.
Yeah, you got a lot of chances for men on second base or men on first base, and you're like, okay, all you need to do is advance this runner.
Right.
And you just could never get that one clutch hit to push ahead. And to be fair, the Yankees really didn't do a good job of that either. But
right, these were all close games. It's not like the Orioles got blown out in every game. Even the game that they scored, you know, 5 runs in the 9th, so it looked ugly at the end. Right. It was a close game for eight innings. And you know, if you looked at the post game wrap up, and you looked at the way Joe Girardi and the Yankees players addressed the media, they were like, "Yep, here we are again. These two teams coming down to the wire. You know, it's all going to be decided in the end of the game, or it's all going to be decided by game 5. That's how it ought to be." You know, it was very clear that, as far as the Yankees were concerned, these two teams were pretty closely matched.
Yeah. Okay. And
it just got away from the Orioles in the end.
I'm done. I've said what I have to say about the ALDS. I'm ready to move on.
I was really wounded by the ALDS loss, and it really hurt and it really sucked at the time. But I'm over it at this point, and at this point I'm just so glad that it happened and that I got to watch.
Yeah, think about what just happened is you had an ALDS series against the New York Yankees that went 5 games.
Yeah.
And it came down literally into the 9th inning where you still had a chance to win that game. In March of this year, when we were talking, there's no way in hell we would have even thought about that.
62 wins. I had 62 wins
in my book. I realize that, but there's no way in hell anyone thought that the Orioles would be playing the Yankees in an ALDS series and go to game 5 and keep it competitive all the way.
Yeah.
I mean, just an absolute magical season. And now, again, the end result, a little bit of tears. Little tears. Some big tears for some people, but little tears. But all honesty, great season. Magical season.
Well, let's move out of the ALDS and talk about the overall season.
We're moving into the epilogue, everybody.
I have to say, this is the best season that I've ever watched or been a part of. This 2012 season, for me, it's been the best of my entire, you know, lifetime of watching Orioles baseball.
Yeah, you know, I've got to think about teams that are in my, you know, lifetime. And I always think about the 96 season, and I always think about the 97 season. But here's the thing. The guys on that team were really not very likable. I mean, they had a lot of free agent acquisitions where basically we went out and just got someone and said, all right, we'll come and get you. And you're kind of like, okay, they're building a team that is supposed to go out there and get it. This was a team that was really, you know, personality-driven. You know, you've got a bunch of goofballs from Luis Ayala basically hitting on women out in the bullpen or going out and trying to catch balls. You got Darren O'Day with his solo wheel going around and then Buck pulling pranks on him. And then you've got Chris Davis, who's just a goofball, going and picking people. Nate McLouth off. I mean, Nate McLouth is another individual that just screams personality. And just the adversity that this team faced with Markakis being out for half the season, Brian Roberts coming back for, you know, 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden saying, nope, I can't practice anymore because I've got a groin strain. Wink, wink, hot wife. It's just a really... and Chris Davis, again, pitching that 2 innings in Boston for that 17-inning game. It was just truly an amazing season. And people always talk about the 1989 why not season. There's no way this even comes close to that. This season trumps the 1989 why not series by leaps and bounds.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, you talk about the 96 and 97 series. We went out and bought players. I mean, we were the Yankees in yes. those 2 years. We went out and we built a team of superstars. There was an expectation of winning. And keep in mind, the Orioles hadn't been terrible. The Orioles were, I believe they were in first place in that 94 strike short season.
They were.
You know, so there was precedent of the Orioles not being awful. And think again about the fact that it hadn't been that long since the Why Not series season. It hadn't been incredibly long since 83 by the time you got there. You know, in retrospect, the way we look at things now.
Yeah, but then there was 87. But we don't want to talk about 87.
This season, nobody expected anything from the Orioles. We were looking for just not embarrassment.
If we could actually got 500, our opinion was, oh my God,
right.
It would be the most amazing thing, and Buck would be an absolute godsend.
And you're absolutely right about the, you know, the characters on this team, but they went from being lovable expected losers to being lovable players on a winning team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about it because...
They got some swagger, basically, through the whole season. They kept getting that additional swagger and saying, we deserve to be here because this team can compete.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up because I wonder if it's not just that the players got their swagger back. I think the city and the fan base got its swagger back. And so I ask you, did the Orioles do enough in 2012 to reconnect with the fan base?
I am going to say yes. And I'm actually going to divert entirely from the aspect of the team, like the players. I'm actually going to go right to public relations in the office. The promotions that they did in September with the Buckle Up campaign and also the ticket promotions for saying, we are going to offer cheap tickets for you to come out to the ballpark and support this team in September, played a huge role in getting people into that ballpark and supporting and talking about that team. Kudos to them, because they could have literally said, hey, we got a winning team. You guys can either come out or not. They actively tried to get more people to come out to the stadium when they didn't have to. And that's the kind of movement and everything that we've been asking for the Orioles to do for years upon years. And you've sent letters upon letters to them and everything. And they've never done anything. They'll say, yes, thank you for your suggestion. We'll take it under consideration. Well, they finally opened that cabin up and said, look at all these great suggestions that we have. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And they did a great job of doing that. And I think the city really reconnected with it. And this city really became a baseball and football town. It was really amazing. You know, you consider when Machado was called up.
Early
August. And everyone was calling up and saying, oh, do you think the Orioles did that today because it's the Ravens' first preseason game? And then when September started happening, there really was not much talk about the Ravens. It was all Orioles talk on Baltimore Sports Radio. It was truly amazing because any of us already know Baltimore Sports Radio is always dominated by the Ravens from May to, you know, January. And then it's that period between January to March and April where it's like, God, I hope Terps basketball is good, but it's not going to be good. But I hope Terps basketball is good because there's nothing else.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, I love arguing with you, but I think you're right on every point there. You know, there was the Why Not season in 1989. It had an identity, right? And I think that we didn't really have a team or a season with an identity until 2012. And that Buckle Up campaign that they came up with, it really kind of embodied the whole season. Because it was, you know, obviously, haha, Buck Showalter. But it's really Buck's team,
yeah.
Buck's approach that has brought us from, you know, the darkness into actually being relevant in baseball again. And the whole Buckle Up thing was like, holy crap, hang on. This might just happen.
Yeah.
And I really think that that was a, you know, clever wordplay. But it really is the defining identification for this season. And I agree that the Orioles did everything right at the end of the season to present the fan base with an olive branch saying, exciting things are going on in the field, and we want you to be a part of it. Please come out and be a part of it. And they did it at the right time. They did it at a time when the team was playing well and had a chance to go to the playoffs, but nothing was assured yet. And so what do? You lower the ticket prices, you make sure that people are on board so that if you make it, like they happen to do,
right,
you built momentum rather than kind of stumbling into the playoffs. It was the first time in a long time that organizationally I really felt like they made the right moves.
And I will give some credit to the city of Baltimore. We gave them hell the whole season saying, you got to come out and support this team. You got to come out and support this team. But this city could have easily ignored this team, even with those promotions. Take, for example, the Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays do an excellent job with cross-promotion, too, with bringing in concerts, family nights, and everything. And that team is a great organization in terms of always being a competitive team. But they have a very tough time drawing above 13,000, regardless of how well they're playing.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter how much cross-promotion that they're doing or how many cowbells they're giving away. They can never get over 13,000. And in September, past that Chicago White Sox series, we were consistently bringing 25,000 plus into the stadium. And on some nights, it was more than that. But you were always bringing in 25,000, even on weekdays. Is it a sellout like back in 96 and 97? No. But has the demographic changed completely where, again, you've got the Nationals in the South, but also you've got a lot more options to do stuff. You've got HD channels now where you can literally watch the game and be like, I've got instant replay. Why do I need to go to the baseball game? I just think Baltimore really responded well, both in terms of supporting this team and continuing to be interested in this team during the offseason. I get more talk about the Orioles sometimes at work now than I even do the Ravens, and it's football season. So
yeah, I don't know if it's because the Ravens have had their struggles with injury and performance and that kind of stuff, but I got to tell you, because the Orioles were so pressed, so forward and so in the spotlight at the beginning of the Ravens season, I myself, as a big Ravens fan, found myself less, not enthusiastic, but just less connected to the football season because of the way the Orioles presented themselves. I've never had to divert my attention before.
Right.
So hopefully that's a problem that I'm going to have to get used to.
Well, my wife said to me, actually this past weekend, she's like, does it seem to you like the football season really went quickly this season? And I said, yeah, well, I said, we lost a whole month of the football season because of Orioles baseball. She's like, yeah, I guess you're right. She's like, it's tough to focus on one team or the other. And I said, just enjoy it for the time being. I said, we got to watch baseball in the afternoon and football at night pretty much for all of September. I said, it was a pretty glorious ride.
Yeah, that's a first world problem right
yeah.
there. So I agree with you. I think that they've reconnected with the fan base. And I think that if they make good on that promise next year, they will really have them back.
Yeah, I think it's just now a matter of getting businesses to buy back in for season ticket plans. And I think once that starts happening, you're going to see a really big boom for the Orioles. And that includes sponsorships, but also getting those seats taken up. If they could go from 10,000 season tickets to, let's say 16,000, I would consider that a huge success for the Baltimore
Orioles. Oh, absolutely. Well, hey, Baltimore. I mean, a bird on it. Let's move from a synopsis of the season itself, and let's get a little bit into the hot stove, off season here. I want to talk a little bit about Dan Duquette's style and
what
constraints or support you think he has from the organization. Do you feel that Duquette's been given a blank check saying, you know, go out and, you know, get what you need to make the team a competitor, or do you think the organization has said, okay, well, we need to remain a bit conservative with our monetary policy, but here's some dollars, see what you can do?
I think it's the second one. I think he's still under the conservative blanket, and they're saying, hey, you can't be the Yankees. We'll write you a check for, well, you had $80 million last year. We'll write it for $83.5 this year. Good luck in shuffling those cards around and seeing what you can come up with this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Duquette basically said that when he answered questions from reporters when they asked him that.
That was at the Jimmy John's press conference, right?
Right, right, over lunch. And he said, you know, we're not going to make splashy off-season moves. What you'll probably see from us are moves like re-signing a guy like Saunders.
Right.
And when I heard him say that, I thought, well, okay. You're not going to be able to go out and spend the big money. You're going to try to go find diamonds in the rough. You're going to try to, you know, get lightning in a bottle and all that kind of good stuff. I'm not really sure how to feel about that, because on one hand, I feel that that's a constraint when you have to wait for, you know, when you have to wait out on free agents. But on the other hand, Duquette did a really good job this year of finding diamonds in the rough and going to all the sources of talent, be it minor league free agents or international signings or guys who were retreads but had talent, to put a team together. And you kind of hope that he'll be able to recreate that magic. However, it's a really tough pill to swallow as a fan. And frankly, it's a risky proposition from an organizational standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, you can try to keep continuing to catch lightning in the bottle, but eventually lightning is going to strike you.
Sure.
And it's just the safer option, again, and the safer and easier option is to go out and spend the money. That being said, if the owner's not willing to spend it, then it's not an option. So it's really a question of whether the ownership group wants to go out there and spend the money. We all can't be as privileged as the Yankees to go out and purchase a free agent like, oh, I don't know, Alex Rodriguez, and pay him $25 million a season and then say, eh, we'll bench him for Lord Voldemort.
I was going to say, the question is, can we go out and get a Raul Ibanez?
You know what would happen is we would sign Raul Ibanez and he would come here and he would bat 138. I don't speak Parsons' tongue, sorry.
No, sorry about that. No, I agree with you. It's a risky proposition, and we're just going to see, you know, how many rabbits Duquette can pull out of his hat in this offseason.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done trying to predict what he's going to try to do.
I think he's going to go to Jimmy John's and try to order lunch.
They deliver, so they might just bring lunch to him.
It's a good possibility.
I think there's a delivery fee, though, so I'm not sure if he can afford that, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, well, that's a lot of questions that need to get answered, and I guess all we can do at this point is just wait.
Yep, we got 4 months until the start of baseball season. We did get 3 gold gloves with J.J. Hardy, Matt Wieters, and somehow Adam Jones got a gold glove. I'm not sure how that happens.
So. Nor I.
Mike Trout should literally go pop a bubble in Adam Jones' face because he was absolutely robbed.
Well, Jones just stayed hungry. I mean, that was must have been what it was.
Okay. But I think the aspect is great season, Baltimore Orioles. We'll see what they can do next year, but temper reservations, Orioles fans. There's not going to be a huge splash this offseason.
This is the season I've looked forward to the most in, again, all of my Oriole fandom. So, you know, look forward to an exciting off season, if not because we're doing things that are fun, because we've got great baseball to look forward to.
Yeah, I think that's all we can say. Like I said, we'll follow up in like a month or so when something actually happens, and we'll do a quick podcast and talk about, you know, statistics and stuff like that. But, you know, it's not going to be one of these weekly things anymore. We really don't have anything that we need to talk about on a weekly basis, so we'll post on the Twitter account and just kind of cross-promote it as best we can when there's a new blog post, and we'll go from there. But come next March and April, we'll be back at it on a weekly basis again.
That's right. Much to your chagrin.
Well, no, I mean, pretty much the only reason the Orioles won this season is because we started podcasting.
That's true. You know, we had never done it before, and, well, look where it led us, so we've got to keep it up.
Well, yeah, I mean, all the Orioles and Buck are listening, so
very clear.
You guys, you're on notice. Next year, World Series or bust.
All right, with that, I think we should wrap it up.
Alrighty. Until next time, whenever that may be, probably before winter meetings, I'm guessing we'll probably do something. This is Bird's Eye View. Good night, everybody.
See you.